Good morning, and welcome to the July 29th, 2019. Let me get the right year. 9:30 meeting that is starting at 9:42. Sorry about that because of the special meeting beforehand. We start with our preamble. The chair of the Arizona State Massage Board reserves the right to change the order of the items published on this agenda except for public hearings set for a specific time. During the board meeting and upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session to obtain legal advice from the board's attorneys pursuant to Arizona Revised Statutes 38431.03A3 on any items listed on the agenda. All meeting attendees whose presence is not required in the executive session may remain in the board meeting room when the board withdraws to chambers for the executive session. Any and all legal action will take place in an open session. We already called to order. Let's do a roll call.
Emily Clark.
Victoria Bowman.
John Ortega.
Earl Dusky. Call to the public pursuant to ARS 38-431.01H, the board may take an open call to the public during the public meeting, subject to reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions to allow individuals to address the public body on any issue within the jurisdiction of the public body. However, members of the board are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. The board, however, may ask staff to review the matter or may ask that the matter be put on a future agenda. We do have one call to the public. Lynn Carey and Susan Woodard. I do have to ask that is already on the agenda. So is this in regards to that? Because you'll have all the time to speak in regards to that.
Chair Dusky, we just filled that out so you had a record of our appearance. We'll certainly wait until our matter is called.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, declaration of conflicts of interest? None? No? Review, discussion, and possible action on the board meeting minutes. Discussion and approval of the board meeting. We are on item 5, by the way, just to make sure that I'm staying on top of things. Discussion and approval of the massage board and open session meetings from the June 24th, 2019 meeting.
Victoria Bowman, I move we accept the meetings from June 24th, 2019.
Emily Clark, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Board presentation of Arizona trade school closures, student tuition protection by Mr. Kevin LaMountain, Private Post-Secondary Education Board.
Mr. Chairman, we'll have to send him a note and see if he still plans to attend this morning. It was confirmed last week, but I don't see him here.
So we want to move that to a later time. Okay. Let's see how time goes. Moving to item number 7, consent calendar. That we just accept all the items on this. Unless somebody has one item or something that they need to pull out.
Except A, B, and C.
John Ortega, I have a question.
Okay.
Does staff have the mechanisms to verify these schools from another country?
My question.
Do you want to just pull that off the consent and then you can... You don't have questions on the other two. You could deal with those, and then we could just call that matter on the agenda and have more discussion on it. Okay. So, and just a reminder to board staff, this is something we had forecast to do more often in the board. So on your consent agenda, if there's ever a matter that's listed in that section that you want to have discussion about, just let the chair know, and that'll be pulled and discussed separately. And the other items, the thought is these are non-controversial and you can just accept them and vote to accept staff's recommendation on those. And we can dispose of, you know, sometimes multiple matters in a quick order. So that's what I'd recommend for this one is that, you know, item A1, 7A1 is pulled from the consent agreement. And if board staff, I mean, if the board members want, you can vote to accept items B and C.
So do we have a I'll make a motion. I made a motion. We'll go ahead and accept items 7A, B, and C as...
Not A, because that's the one...
Excuse me, B and C.
Okay.
Victoria Bowman, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And then, item unanimously. Still go back to A1?
A, no, yeah.
Okay. So, recommendation by staff to grant Arizona massage license for the following temporary license holder, Mr. Stephen Van Schubert, temporary license issued by the staff on 6/27. Request for a permanent Arizona license from the board of, as a Canadian citizen.
And my only, John Ortega, my only question is, does staff have the mechanism to check schools from other countries? That's...
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ortega, the answer is yes. In this particular case, this gentleman is here with the Phoenix Coyotes and was starting work immediately and didn't have the ability to be an active licensee in the state. So the temporary license was offered in interest of time and his role with the Coyotes. And but the issue before you today is actually that the qualifications have been verified through the licensing process to see if the board would support our recommendation for a permanent license based on the credentials.
Okay, well, that satisfies my question. Okay.
Victoria Bowman, I move that we accept 7A1 and issue a permanent Arizona license.
John Ortega.
Van Schubert.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Can the public comment on something?
Mr. Chairman, let me help you out here. The call to the public portion of the agenda has already passed. So you're still on item number 7.
Sorry, not at this moment.
Mr. Chairman, once again, let me help you out here. Ma'am, the call to the public portion of the agenda has already been called and heard.
All right.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, you have the floor again.
Well, and I understood the vote to have occurred, so this matter has been voted on and approved.
Okay. I wanted to say so moved, but passes unanimously. So we are moving on. Do we have a time for these? Are we ready for the?
I incorrectly informed Ms. Williams that I thought they were at 10. So for the hearing matter. So that's my mistake. But if we could just delay those until 10 and do some other business until that time.
Okay. So we can take, that was Woodward?
I'm sorry. I thought we were going to the hearings. That's why.
The formal hearings were set for.
Yeah, you can do the investigative review files. Yeah. And Ms. Woodward's here with counsel. It's probably a good one to.
Which one?
B1. 8B1.
B1?
8B as in boy, 1.
And C?
Make sure we weren't good stepping on time constraints.
Yeah, I think, John Ortega, I think taking C would be a good idea, too.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move that. Let's go to number 8, C1, Adam Heisler.
Adam Heisler is requesting a review of probation on case thank you. 17-119.
And Mr. White, everything's been satisfied?
Yes. Mr. Heisler, that would be the last one, right?
Right.
And he has fulfilled all of his obligations that he's imposed on him.
Okay. Let's Mr. Heisler, you want to just give us a...
I mean, 40 hours, there's a lot of hours, a lot of time and money. But I apologize for my tardiness. I know there's a certain date, you know, I was supposed to do it by, but I've been a therapist for 10 years and then going back to regular jobs, as they call it, you know, cost well over $1,000 to complete 40 hours. And, definitely learned, don't let that lapse, you know. Each state and legislations are different, so make sure wherever you live, you follow accordingly.
Okay. Thank you. I hear a motion.
Emily Clark, I make a motion that we go ahead and reinstate, remove Mr. Heisler from probationary status.
Victoria Bowman, I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. All right.
Just how simple that was going
to
be.
With your indulgence, we might be able to go back now to hear Mr. LaMountain on item number 5.
He's here.
He has arrived, and if you'd like to go back to that item on the agenda, you can call that.
So we are going to go with number 5, the presentation, and... Mr. LaMountain.
Good morning. My name is Kevin LaMountain. I'm with the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education. I was asked to provide just a brief overview of the process in terms of closure for schools, and specifically for Cortiva and what we do, and if there are any other additional closures, which we hope not in the future. So just so that you understand, our board regulates all private post-secondary institutions in the state of Arizona, which would include any massage school. We do a lot of due diligence to make sure that these schools are in compliance with the state regulations that we have. We're a part of what is considered the triad for education. So it's a state licensure and regulation, which is what we're responsible for. The accreditor for those institutions that are accredited that seek Title IV funding. And then the United States Department of Education. So in order for a school to stay in business and to recruit students and to utilize Title IV funds, financial aid funds, you need to have all three of those. So we're an integral component to stay in business and educate students. Our board reviews financial matters of the institutions. We do everything that we can to make sure that the institution is doing the right thing educationally for the students. And then at a time, if a school is to close, then there's a number of different things that happen, and I just wanted to provide some of that information and as it relates to Cortiva. So there's two types of closures that happen. One's a precipitous closure, which is they're in business on Friday. Students come in, knock on the door on Monday morning, and the school is no longer in operation. Those are terrible. Unfortunately, we've had quite a few of those over the last 5 to 6 years, not necessarily massage school related, but other types of institutions. And those are very, very challenging, very difficult for us because we have to go in at that point in time, figure out who their student population is, get as many student records as we can possibly get, whether they're hard copy students, student transcripts and files, or if they're electronic. It's a very challenging process. So the precipitous one is very difficult, very challenging. Just to kind of put it into perspective for student records, when we go in and a school does close, we're responsible for all of those student records forever. We currently have in Iron Mountain 8 million documents of student records, of student transcripts, of student ledger cards, catalogs, everything that may help a student become licensed or employed in the future. So those are it's a very time-consuming and huge challenge for us to keep going. So we have a precipitous closure. And then I just wanted to talk briefly about the way in which Cortiva closed. They did it through an announced closure where they provided the students a set of criteria and of what that closure was going to look like, how long it was going to take. They did an internal teach out, which means that the students were allowed, those students that were in the program were allowed to complete their program within the time frame that they've set aside for that, and graduate from the institution. That's the best way to do it. Cortiva actually did, in our opinion, my opinion of doing a lot of these closures, a very good job coordinating that with the students. They reached out to additional partners for students that had just started their program, for other schools that taught a similar type. I know SWEHA was one of them. ACES was another school that they reached out to, Arizona College that they reached out to see some of those brand new students that were going into the massage programs and have them go and get their dreams fulfilled at one of the other institutions. So they did a good job with that. The school is officially closed. We are in receipt of all of those student records. And that goes back all the way, I believe, through the early 80s. Although Cortiva was, they've had a couple of name changes. They've also purchased a number of schools along the way. So all of those records, all of that is maintained under one, which is Cortiva. So we'll be utilizing forever. We have those records, and we thankfully have most of them electronic, which is a great way to be able to help the student. So it's our responsibility to keep them forever and always have that record available to a student if they need any type of additional assistance. And the last piece to that is we also maintain a student tuition recovery fund, which is for a school that closes, such as Cortiva or any precipitous closure school. We have a fund that has, by statute, has to have about $500,000 in it. We're a little bit lower now because of the number of claims that we've paid out. So the student tuition recovery fund is a fund that schools pay into. Cortiva did pay into that when they were still operating. All the other private post-secondary institutions pay into that fund. That when a school closes and there is not an option for the student to complete their program, that they are then allowed to cite and go forward with putting together an application to attach to our strife fund whatever cash money that they paid into to the school. Not their Title IV, because those are typically forgiven by the United States Department of Education during a school closure, but that gap that happens. A number of students have a gap between what Title IV pays for and what the total tuition, fees, books, and all the rest of that. So then those students would be eligible to apply for a student tuition recovery fund to cover that difference. So really the goal is to make the student whole if a school closure happened. So again, with Cortiva, those students are have completed all four campuses of Cortiva have completed, and those students are either at another institution or graduated. But again, as far as records are concerned, we have a copy of all of those. So if there's anything that this board needs in terms of licensure for students, for graduates going forward, that could be a direct relation where we'll get those to you as quick as we can.
Thank you. Do you have a contact if someone talks to us or we need to talk to you about transcripts or anything like that for ourselves or for someone else that may be interested in looking into this for themselves?
Yes. So if they go to our website, all of the information, so it's ppse.az.gov, and if they go to a section called For Students, under there is the school closures that we have, what we know about those particular closures, and then the process to get an official transcript taken care of. And they can, or they can call me directly or anybody in our department, and we'll help them as quickly as possible.
All on databases that are readable, and or are they transcribed in? Or
it depends on the school. It depends on the time frame. So with the Cortiva batch of transcripts that we have, the students that are enrolled and graduated and or enrolled and didn't graduate over the last 6 or 7 years, we have a transcript that you would normally see at any other institution that you would go to. It's very the courses that they took, the grades that they had, the overall number, and whether or not they graduated. It's the the individuals that attended 20 years ago, 15 years ago, those some of those are converted from microfiche. Some of those are on handwritten. So those are all part of our wonderful storage of 8 million documents that we have at Iron Mountain. That so and unfortunately for that, for a student that graduated, let's say 20 years ago, it could take us a month to locate the transcript. 8 million is a lot of papers to look through. So going forward, though, and the good thing that we do have in place is by statute now, every school that we find that may have a problem going forward needs to have electronic database, and they need to grant us access. And so anything moving forward, like with the Cortiva, we have the majority of those in electronic form that we can get to a student quickly. If they call me right now, I can have a transcript to them in 15, 20 minutes.
There's no compatibility issues or...?
We're requiring that they put everything in a PDF format. So as long as it's a searchable PDF that I can get to, then I can make sure that we get do the right thing for the student. Oh. Great. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your time. And anything that we can do to help the students and the graduates, just that's what we're here to do.
Thank you for helping.
Thank you. Thank you.
Know what's going on. Thank you.
Are you going to move to the formal hearings?
Yes, right now. So we are moving to number 8A. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the board may go into executive session pursuant to. Do I need to read that again? Because it was read at the beginning.
No, you don't need to.
Okay. So formal hearings pursuant to ARS 32-4254. The board will hold the formal hearings to review, discuss, and take possible action.
We need to call.
So calling case number one, case number 19-149, Susan Johnson.
Sure, I know. You're receiving some materials.
Sorry?
The materials you're receiving are for the next matter, and if you'll indulge me, I did file a motion on behalf of the state, and if I could present that to you, I can give you an update on where we are. But the state has requested a change, of course. So with your permission, may I present the state's motion? I have a motion to present.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll have that. Do all the board members have the motion that the state filed?
I haven't handed it out. It would have been in your packet. Or?
A1-2.
Do you know if that's in your materials?
Honestly, say that.
I'm not sure exact day, but it.
We make copies of the board.
I can present it to you. It's quite simple, but we did file a motion, and I copied Ms. Johnston. We had some discussion about it before it was filed, and it's, you know, my not getting it in promptly that if for any reason it's not in your materials, that's my mistake. I would just let you know that after the meeting, I had some discussion with Ms. Johnston, and at the time of your last meeting, I think she had indicated, you know, I want to go to a hearing. And so the board voted to go to a hearing. But the matter in question did not appear to be one that, you know, needed revocation or suspension as its outcome or that it was likely. And then, as you know, we've kind of moved since that time to proceeding first with a formal interview before we go to a formal hearing. So in discussion with Ms. Johnston, two things. She indicated to me she was willing to go to the formal interview step first, which was the state's preference anyway. But in addition, that there was some schedule conflicts and that just moving it and continuing it would be in her interest, and the state had no objection. So with all that background, the state moved that we vacate the decision to send the matter to formal hearing and instead vote to send the matter to a formal interview at a future meeting. And Ms. Johnson, did you have a conflict in August? Or was it?
No, I had a birthday trip I was going to go on, then I moved a day out. But I do want to note, I was very confused as to how it is I could speak to my own defense. I thought the only route was a formal hearing. I had no idea there was other steps.
And so it's sounding like there's no conflict in August. That would be the anticipated time that a formal interview would take place if you were to grant the state's request.
Discussion?
Victoria Bowman, can we second his motion, or do we need to make our...
You have to move to grant the state's motion if you are in favor of it. And if you can you just state the title? I don't have it in front of me. It was like a two-prong.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me either. But it was a motion to vacate the decision to send the matter to formal hearing and to send the matter instead to formal interview and to continue it to August. And I made an alternative motion, which is if to the extent you really just want to do the formal hearing, that we'd still ask that you continue it to August because neither of us are prepared coming here today to do either process.
Victoria Bowman, I move that we accept the state's motion to change this from a formal hearing to a formal interview and postpone it to the August 2019 massage board meeting.
Clark.
August 26th.
Emily Clark, second.
Does that need a roll call?
No. No roll call.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
On to item number 8A2, Jean-Pierre Grayson.
Not here, but the witness is here. All right. Do you have your script for that one?
The formal.
Susan Johnson.
Is this mine?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You go under tab 3A.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can start there. Do we have a...
The formal hearing?
Yeah, didn't you write these?
No.
This is your script.
No.
He
didn't get these two papers.
Oh.
I have an additional copy if needed.
Well, I'm willing to share if that's okay.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. I got those.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Those for... Okay, I thought this was for the previous one. That's why I thought it was... Never mind. Because it was handed out there in the last one, so I thought it was for that one. I apologize. Okay. Time, date, and place where the matter dealing with case number 19-153 is scheduled to be heard by the for Jean-Pierre Grayson. Scheduled to be heard by the Arizona State Board of Massage Therapy. The subject of this hearing is set forth in the complaint and notice of hearing. This is a formal administrative hearing to determine if there has been a violation of the board's statutes and rules, and whether disciplinary action is warranted. Board members present for this hearing are, roll call.
Emily Clark.
Victoria Bowman.
John Ortega.
Earl Dusky. Items on the record. Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint of notice of hearing, the respondent's answer, if one is filed, all pleadings of record. Appearances. Will the parties please identify themselves first to state and then the respondent?
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Michael Rain with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the state.
Responded?
I don't believe the respondent is here. So if you can have the state or staff confirm that he has been properly served.
Mr. White?
If he was properly served and also returned a response to us, he wouldn't come.
So, shall we move down to, is the state ready to proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
A hearing of this nature differs from a court proceeding. The technical rules of evidence do not apply. Reliable hearsay evidence is admissible. The board will entertain objections concerning irrelevant, repetition, and otherwise inadmissible evidence. However, the board is the sole judge of the weight given to the evidence received. In a disciplinary proceeding, the state bears the burden of the proof and shall go first and present its case. Then the respondent shall present their case. After it hears all the evidence and the arguments of the parties, the board will deliberate and decide whether to dismiss the case or take appropriate disciplinary action. Where the witnesses, all persons who are called as witnesses in this matter, including respondent, please come forward, give your name, and be sworn. Would you raise your right hand? Pardon?
Mr. White as well.
I won't be calling Mr. White.
Okay. Do you solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Are there any before the hearing testimony from witnesses, are there any preliminary matters that the board should consider?
Only, Mr. Chair, that I have passed out two documents. Typically, I'd have an index for exhibits, but there was only one. I've added one at the last minute. So I just want to note that for the record. You should have two documents. One is the respondent's answer, which is signed by him. This is the answer to the complaint. Is one of the pleadings, and I'd ask that the chair and the board take notice of the answer and incorporate it into your hearing record.
Okay.
Which, as a pleading, I mean, it's already part of the record, but I do plan to reference that. The other document that you have that I'll go over briefly with the witness is her complaint to the board, is pretty short, and it's only two pages. But with that, the state can proceed to an opening argument if you would indulge.
Everybody get a chance to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. get a chance? Okay. I just wanted to make state wish to make any opening statement?
Yeah, very briefly, Mr. Chair. With me today is the client at issue here, whose initials are BJ, and that's how I'll refer to her, as you are familiar, to protect her confidentiality, privacy. So BJ is very experienced in receiving massages. She'll tell you that she's had over 100 massages as an athlete and just in general having quite extensive experience in the massage recipient side of the massage therapy industry. And nothing like this has happened. She recognized it as something obviously out of the norm, but as she went to this massage that she thought was, standard massage, nothing really ailing her, nothing that caused her to go in particular, but, just kind of routine therapy. It obviously took a quite different turn than what she expected. And just as briefly as I can put it, she was manipulated and stretched in ways that exposed her genitals. She was massaged and draped in a way that exposed her breasts. She had her breast touched in the process by the respondent of him correcting his poor draping. He used that as an opportunity to to touch her bare breast. And in addition, those indications of possible sexual intent or at the best negligence came home at the near the conclusion of the massage, where the licensee kissed the client 2 times without her request, without her permission. Not that her giving a request or permission changes the outcome, but quite certainly it wasn't initiated by her. And I think when you put that together with the other indications of a sexual intent by the licensee, that we know, you know, this wasn't a caring kiss, but one intended for the purpose of making a sexual advance, which your law prohibits. I do want to note that the answer that I passed out incorporates the respondent's initial answer at the investigative stage, and this was framed this case as the quintessential he said, she said, and also kind of a I know you are, but what am I case, where he says, that wasn't me, she kissed me. And I think when you hear the story and just think about it with a massage therapy client on the table, just the mechanics of how she was alleged to have somehow kissed him against his will from her position lying on the massage table is just nonsensical. And it's to the extent you believe VJ in her testimony that it's actually him who had kissed her, then I think that makes his answer quite offensive. To not only deny misconduct, but to turn it around and allege that the victim of your misconduct was the actual perpetrator, I think is quite offensive. And then in his answer to have said, I have a defense, and I know this proceeding's coming forward before you, and I'm just not going to come, I think is quite telling. So the state will present the testimony of BJ, and we do hope that reach a result that appropriately disciplines the licensee if you believe what she has to say. Thank you.
No respondent.
So the state can call its first witness.
I'd like to call your first witness.
Yes, and the state would call the massage therapy client with the initials BJ, who's sitting to my left, to the right of me, from your perspective. Okay, BJ, have you ever had testified or given a deposition, anything of that nature before?
No.
Okay. And I have in front of me a document that's in front of you as well. There's some redactions here. The second page has a short narrative. Starts out 80-minute massage on March 15th, 2019. Did you prepare this complaint?
No.
No, you didn't. Who prepared it?
The manager of the spa that I went to.
Okay. But are you familiar with it?
Yes.
Okay. And did you authorize or otherwise have no objection to that manager preparing this complaint?
No.
Okay. And did you submit it?
No.
Okay. So here where it says it's redacted, but it has a signature line, it's not a pen signature. It's like a typed-in mm-hmm. signature. That wouldn't have been you that put that in there?
Correct.
Okay. But do you, just briefly looking at it, it says 80-minute massage on March 15th, 2019. Does that sound accurate? The length or date?
It was a 60-minute massage.
Okay. And so the date of March 15th, 2019, is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. And where did that massage take place? What facility?
Hand in Stone.
Okay. And who was the massage therapist who provided you services that day?
Grace and John.
And in terms of the narrative here, it says, during the massage, there were some stretching maneuvers with the legs that made me feel uncomfortable. Number two, at the end of the service, the massage therapist kissed me on the lips. This action in particular happened twice. I know there's more to say, mm-hmm. but are those accurate statements?
Yes.
Okay. And other than this complaint form, did you... Is there any other way that you're aware of that the board was notified that this incident had occurred?
I was in contact with Mr. White.
Okay, subsequent to the complaint, perhaps?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd
move that we admit the complaint document into the record as the state's Exhibit 1.
Any objections?
Are you admitting it?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I want to say a bit more.
Okay. So, I may I proceed? Okay. So, BJ, let's just talk about your history of massages. How many massages do you think you had had before this incident took place?
Definitely over 100.
Okay. And just why, that's a lot of massages for your average person. Why do you have so extensive of a massage therapy history?
I was an athlete, so I had massages regularly.
Okay. And so have you had massages that are both, you know, sports massages, you know, healing injuries or rehabbing injuries, as well as massages that are more, you know, relaxation-oriented?
Yes.
Okay. And in that over 100 massages, a decent mix of both, or were they primarily more of that sports healing and training massages?
A mix of both. After I stopped running track, it was more just for relaxation.
Okay. And so have you had massages at both, you know, training facilities for sports programs, but also in spa-like atmospheres?
Yes.
Okay. And at this location, I forget, Hand in Stone, what's the first words of it?
Yes.
What's the name of the
Hand in Stone.
Oh, Hand in Stone. Okay, that's it. That's why I couldn't remember the rest. Had you been at the location before the March incident that we're here to talk about?
Yes.
How many times do you think?
Probably around 9.
Okay. And had you had Mr. Jean-Pierre as your massage therapist before this incident?
One time.
Okay. And how did it come to be that you had him as your therapist on the first time?
I wanted a 80-minute hot stone massage, and my typical masseuse wasn't there that day.
Okay. And so did they ask you, you know, we have another therapist, is that okay? And you agreed?
Yes.
Okay. And subsequent to that, did you return to your typical masseuse or massage therapist?
She was not there the next time that I wanted to come in, so they placed me with Grayson again.
Okay. But did you request Grayson?
No.
Okay. Did you have any issues in your first massage, however?
No.
Okay. So, sounds like you were probably at that time, sure, you know, you didn't really see any problem with that.
Yes.
Okay. And so for the incident in question, the March of 2019 massage, March 15th to be exact, was anything bothering you? What was, you know, your desire? What type of massage did you want that day?
Just a relaxation, like my monthly massage.
Okay. And were you on some kind of program where you had, you know, funds available to debit against?
Yes.
Okay. How often would you go there to get massages?
At least once a month, sometimes twice.
Okay. So this was just using your account?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you went to the place, was there any sort of mechanism where you would, you know, to go on an iPad or otherwise fill out any forms or speak to anyone about what you wanted that day in terms of focus, if any?
I would just speak to the masseuse if anything was bothering me, if I wanted pressure in certain areas.
Okay. Now, did Mr. Jean-Pierre, did he have that discussion with you at all?
Yes.
Okay. And could you just maybe describe to the board, the best of your memory, what did you tell him you were looking for that day?
Just regular massage. No areas were causing me issues or problems.
Okay. And I think you said before his first massage that he had provided you was a stone, hot stone massage.
Yeah.
So was that, did that involve any stretching or sports massage techniques?
No.
Okay. And so did you ask for any of those techniques in the March 15th massage?
No.
Did you tell him any specific area of your body that he could focus on because it had been troubling you, anything of that nature?
No.
Okay. Okay. And typical start to the massage, I suspect, where he asked you to disrobe to your level of comfort?
Yes.
Okay. And did he leave the room at that time?
Yes.
Okay. And did you disrobe completely?
Yes.
Okay. And was there any issue there in terms of anyone coming in or bothering you?
No.
Okay. And so I imagine you're draped or you've gotten yourself covered up and he returns to the room. You eventually, obviously, had some issues with this massage, but could you just describe, how did it begin? Was there any, I mean, maybe take us briefly through the point to where things started to trouble you.
I was face down, he was working on my back, and my hamstrings, and that was fine. And then when I turned over, he started working on my quads and stretching me in very vulnerable ways.
Okay. So if you're on your back, was he lifting your leg kind of vertically so that your heel or your toe would be facing the ceiling?
Yes. He first started with having if my like right leg was on the table, my left leg was out perpendicular, like an L, and then he put it up towards the wall.
Okay.
The ceiling.
So at that time, was half of your leg essentially undraped?
Yes.
Okay. And did that drape come up high on your thigh?
Yes.
Okay. So as he had done that maneuver, did you request that at all?
No.
Okay. Had you ever had anyone do that in a massage for you without it
No.
being discussed? Okay. And did you feel or experience that that maneuver exposed your genitals?
Yes.
And from the position that he was in, would he have been able to see them if he looked?
Yes.
Okay. And did he do that on both sides?
Yes.
So same procedure, but the opposite leg. Any discussion from him at that time, or he's just going on about his business? And
no discussion.
Okay. And the actual stretching itself, apart from the draping issues, was it painful or otherwise, you know, the technique itself rather than the draping part, was it just, did it hurt you in any way?
No.
Okay. Just apart from the draping, would you have been troubled by it?
I'm sorry.
What I mean to say is the draping, obviously, I think everyone would understand why that would cause you to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But let's just say you were, you know, wearing yoga pants, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't be as concerned about that. But did the maneuver make you uncomfortable as well by itself?
Yes, just because I wasn't expecting it. It wasn't a sports massage or something that I asked for.
Okay. And, okay. Now, I understand there was an additional time that there was a problem with the draping where he had lifted you up while you're laying on your back.
Mm-hmm.
Could you describe that?
I was laying on my back, and he had put his arms underneath mine near my armpits and was stretching my back and my shoulders. And at that time, my body, like my shoulders, came off of the table, and the drape had slipped down.
Okay. So at that time, did that expose your breasts?
Yes.
Okay. And not just your décolletage or something, but your entire breast was exposed?
Yes.
Okay. And how was the drape fixed?
He pulled the drape back up.
Okay. And when he did that, did he say anything?
No.
Okay. When he did that, did his hand touch your breasts?
Yes.
Okay. And did it feel to you at the time that his touching of your breasts when he fixed the fallen drape was more than just incidental?
Yes.
Okay. And is that, I mean, did it linger or was it a combination of what you'd experienced? Could you just describe maybe a little bit why did you feel that way, if you could, or, you know, paint a picture for them?
I feel like if he was going to pull the drape, then he would have pulled the drape like this versus using his hand and touching me with his open hand.
And, again, he didn't say anything or acknowledge that this had happened at all?
No.
Okay. Did you say anything at that time?
No.
Okay. Now, apart from that incident and the stretching incident, I'm aware, obviously, of the kissing incident, but before we get to that part, was there anything else during the massage that you recall that was that you didn't agree with or didn't appreciate?
No.
Okay. So I understand that the kissing incident was near at the conclusion of the massage, and if you could just help the board just describe for them the first time it happened.
I was laying on my back still, and he was massaging my upper back and my neck. And I felt him very close to my face, and he stopped. And so I opened my eyes, and he asked me what I was thinking. And I asked him why he stopped the massage, and then he kissed me.
Okay. And did he kiss you on your lips?
Yes.
Okay. And did you request that he kiss you?
No.
Okay. And did you initiate that kiss?
No.
Okay. And before any of this happened, and you said he was close to your face, I mean, was he inches, 1 inch, 2 inch?
About an inch and a half.
Okay. You feel his breath on you?
Yes.
Okay. And did that make you uncomfortable, just the breath part?
Yes.
Okay. Ever have anyone do anything like that in a
no.
massage? Okay. And so he kissed you. What were you thinking at that time?
Did that really just happen?
Yeah. And was anything said beyond that immediately, like by you or him?
I said, excuse me.
Did he apologize or say anything else?
No, he got up and walked over to where the warm towels were and got me a warm towel and said, mm-hmm. this is for you to, you know, get all the oil off of you. It's so nice working with you. And then he put the towel down on the table and came back around. And at that time, I had closed my eyes again to just kind of take everything in. And he kissed me again on the lips and then said that he would be outside of the room and then exited the room.
Okay. Now, when he kissed you again, was there any, I mean, did you know he was even coming towards you?
No.
Okay. And were your eyes closed at that time as well?
Yes.
Okay. And just to step back, just because it's a word that can mean a lot of things, but when you had said, excuse me, the first time, was it, you know, excuse me, or... excuse me, as though you had done something wrong.
Oh, no, like, excuse me, like, what are you doing?
Okay. Do you think a reasonable person would have interpreted that as you saying, I'm not interested in that?
Yes.
Okay. But nevertheless, he kissed you again. Now, after you left, that was, I think, pretty much at the conclusion of the massage, right?
Yes.
So he leaves the room. Eventually, you get dressed and leave the room. Could you just describe how, you know, from there to when you're leaving the facility?
So, before he left the room, he was telling me how he enjoyed the massage and he really likes working with me because of the body type that I have. And, hope to see me soon. Then he exited the room. I put my clothes on. I walked out and he had, like a cup of water for me. And, he started walking me to the lobby. And while he was walking me to the lobby, the manager was with him, and then I walked to the front desk, and typically, like, you know, like, the masseuse will, like, walk you to the lobby and then exit so you can, you know, pay or tip, whatever, and he stayed lingering in the lobby, and I felt very uncomfortable to voice what had just happened.
Now, when he had just asked you, or told you, you know, I enjoy working with you because of your body type, did that make you uncomfortable?
Yes.
Okay. Did you interpret that to mean, like, I like your body?
Yes.
Okay. And in terms of paying, you did pay for the massage, didn't you?
Yes.
Okay. And was that using the credit on your account that was already there?
Yes.
Okay. And I just want to briefly go through his statement with you. When he had answered the board's initial complaint, he says she had reconstructed surgery on her ankle and had chronic muscle tension. Is that accurate that you've had some indication of having had a surgery on your ankle?
Yes, I have
okay.
scars.
But did you ever ask him to treat that condition or anything related to it in a massage?
No.
Okay. And... he says she kept fishing for compliments during the massage. Is that true?
No.
It says she requested super deep work. Was that true?
I asked him. He asked if the pressure was okay, and I said that he can go deeper.
Okay. But at the beginning of the massage, you hadn't. I said, you know, I need a deep tissue massage.
No.
Okay. Now he says, I kept the drape very tight. Is that true?
No.
No, in fact, it exposed you at least two different occasions, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, it says towards the end of the massage, and at that time in the massage, you were on your back.
Yes.
Okay, so at the end of the massage, she tried to kiss me twice. Did that happen?
No.
Okay, and if you were to have tried to kiss him while you were laying on your back, wouldn't you have had to do some kind of sit-up and meet him?
Yes.
Okay. And during the massage, did he ever, was he ever on the table? Let me ask you this. Was he always standing?
No.
Okay. What else did he do?
He was on a little chair, and then when he was stretching me, like his knee was on the table.
Okay. But nevertheless, you would have had to do some kind of lifting your body from prone position up to kiss him somehow. And are you following me? Would it have been difficult for you to try and kiss him unexpectedly? Okay. And he says he redirected his attention. He says maybe she was just upset that he turned you down. Did you proposition him in any way, physically or verbally?
No.
Okay. Says she tried to hug me on several occasions. Did you try to hug him? Now it says, she proceeded to the front desk for checkout where she was asked, how was your service? She responded, great. She left a tip and pre-booked another session with me. Did that happen that he would have overheard where you were asked, how was your service? And you said, great.
Yes.
Okay. And at that time, if you said that your service was great, what was going through your mind having had what I understand to be not great service?
I felt very uncomfortable since he was still in the lobby area, and I honestly just wanted to leave the facility as soon as I could.
Okay. And it says she pre-booked another session with me. Is that true?
No.
Okay. In fact, you've never booked a session with Mr. Jean-Pierre, have you?
No.
Okay. Now, for someone who's had a lot of massages, and this sort of thing never happened before. Has it impacted your comfort in the massage therapy room?
Yes.
And, for example, are you less comfortable? Would you still see a male masseuse?
No.
At the massage therapist? No. Okay, but prior to this, did you have any issue, male or female, or a preference?
No.
And you'd been massaged by dozens of male massage therapists before?
Yes.
Okay. And is the desire not to work with a male massage therapist for, have you lost your faith that something like this wouldn't happen?
Yes.
And so you made a complaint to the facility. The massage was on March 15th. Do you know what day of the week that was? Okay. And then could you just describe how did you eventually get back to the facility to tell them, hey, something happened?
So I went home and told my dad what happened, and we called them immediately, but since it was after hours, they didn't answer. So we called them the next day and asked to speak with the owner or manager. And then we set up an appointment to speak with the manager about what had happened.
Okay. So essentially, you tried to do something that same day.
Yeah.
And then you followed up immediately. Okay. And did they inform you what action they took in their facility?
Yes. They said that they had terminated.
Okay. And did you also make any sort of police reports?
Yes.
Okay. And to which... that Phoenix PD or?
Yes.
Okay. And did an officer come and take a report from you?
Yes.
Okay. In person or by phone?
In person.
Okay. And other than making the report, has anything come of that to your knowledge?
No. Okay.
And just be sure, I think that's all I have to say. It was your experience, and if there's anything else you would like to add for the board, I'm do that, but I've asked all the questions I have and would turn it over to them and see if they have any questions. Do you have anything you want to add?
No.
Okay. Thank you. So the state has no more questions.
I don't have any questions.
Was it clear that there was no special, when he did the leg stretching, there was no special draping, he didn't take time to place the draping around you so it covered you?
No. I held the draping because I felt extremely exposed.
Oh, you held the draping?
Yes.
Okay.
So when my legs were up in the air, I put my arm around my leg and pulled the draping down.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't up by your knee or anything like that?
Yeah.
Okay. And he did not tell you that he was going to drape you or stretch you ahead of time.
No.
So it just felt uncomfortable. You've never had stretching done ever before by somebody in a massage?
Like in sports massages. And in that case, then I wear like spandex, so I'm not exposed, but I was fully nude and I didn't ask for the stretching. I didn't know that was going to occur.
Okay. Questions?
None.
The state would.
Any additional witnesses? Pardon?
State rests. No more witnesses.
Okay. We have no respondent, so.
You can go to H.
The evidentiary portion of the administrative hearing. The board will now hear closing arguments. The state may present a closing argument.
Okay. So, really, with only one side of the story, effectively, what you heard and what we ask you to find is that the state had proven by a preponderance of the evidence the factual allegations in the complaint. And in a nutshell, I think there's only three primary facts that are alleged, is that he engaged in stretching and draping techniques that exposed BJ unnecessarily. We think from the totality of the circumstances that the facts demonstrate that that was done to satisfy his sexual interests, not as an incidental mistake in draping. And so for that, we ask that you find that the licensee violated your statutes, in particular your rule, R415-103A, or I should say E, as in echo, requires that a licensee provide draping that ensures the comfort of the patient, of the client, and obviously not that exposes the client for one's own sexual desire. In addition, the complaint alleged the kissing incident. And I think when you put it together with the draping that exposed genitals, exposed breasts, it resulted in the touching of the breast unnecessarily to fix the draping problem with no communication that, oh, I'm sorry, oh my gosh, you know, this happened, or warning her that she might be exposed. And then to kiss a patient, a client who's in such a vulnerable position, as you know, even if a client attempts to sexualize a relationship, the licensee's job is to stop that from happening. But obviously there's no evidence in the record to support that that's what happened. And when you put it together with the other elements, you know, there's lots of different types of kisses, but I think this one's quite clearly was an advance, a sexual advance. The respondent was attempting to move even further down the path he had started at the massage with the draping and the touching of the breasts, and to essentially make an advance. Under your statute, 4254A15, it's unlawful to engage in sexual activity with a client. Sexual activity includes not just the obvious examples of what sexual activity could include, but also making sexual advances or any physical contact that's sexual in nature. That's your definition of sexual activity in subsection 4253B2E. Also, the state cited subsection A10 of your disciplinary statutes that is engaging in any conduct that could harm the public. Again, that would just be conduct that is potentially harmful, but clearly conduct that harms meets the definition of that statute as well. And so apart from just the obvious immediate impact that that massage had on this client, as you heard, this is someone who's been getting massages for quite a long time, hundreds of massages, men, women, all types of different facilities, and not until Mr. Jean-Pierre gave her a massage has she had this fear that, you know, she was ever uncomfortable or at risk of being assaulted. And so I think that that should hopefully motivate this board to consider, you know, not only the impact that it obviously has on this client, but the impact it has on the profession and the reputation of that profession. And, you know, I'm sure this client will share her story with others, and that will reverberate to people she speaks with about massage. So these things could have gone further, but clearly BJ is assertive, and she said, no, excuse me. And she at least sent the signals that this was not going to go any further, and obviously made the complaint immediately after speaking with someone after the massage that very evening, put a stop to it, and has come here and bravely testified, telling her story in public. And so the state asks that you find that it has proven its findings of its allegations of fact, and that you adopt those as your findings of fact, and that it has established the violations set forth in the complaint as alleged violations, and that you adopt those as your conclusions of law. And the state requests that you strongly consider the disciplinary action of revocation in this case. Thank you.
State rest?
Yes.
So, having heard the testimony and reviewed the evidence and the arguments of the parties, the board will now discuss the case. The board can begin with general discussion and entertain motions. The first item for discussion is the findings of fact. The complaint makes factual allegations at page 4.
Paragraphs 1 through 3.
1, 2, and 3. The board will now discuss whether the state has proven these allegations. So.
Victoria Bowman, I move that the board finds that the state had demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence the factual allegations in the complaint. I move the board adopt these allegations 1, 2, and 3 on page 4 as the board's findings of fact.
Emily Clark, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion.
Motion passed.
Passes unanimously.
To the conclusions of law on page.
Second item for discussion is conclusions of law. The complaint makes conclusions of law paragraphs.
It makes alleged violations on page 4 and 5. Paragraphs 1 through
5. 1 through 5. So, pages 4, 1 through 5, the board will now discuss whether the findings of fact have been adopted constitute a violation or violations of the statutes or rules. Is there a motion to adopt all the alleged violations as set in the complaint as the conclusion of law?
Victoria Bowman, I move that the board finds the state has demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence the factual allegations of paragraphs 1 through 5 in the complaint. And that's on page 4 and 5.
Yep, I think you're reading that.
Uh-oh, I'm sorry, I need to go down
last
here.
Time, that's okay.
Okay, alleged violation. Okay, excuse me. Retract that.
Withdraw that motion.
Then I withdraw that one. Victoria Bowman, I move that the board finds that the findings of fact constitute a violation of the statutes and or rules as set forth in the complaint and adopt the alleged violations 1 through 5 on pages 4 and 5 as the conclusions of law.
Second.
Emily Clark, second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? By unanimous. The final issue for discussion is the board's order. The board may consider the following actions pursuant ARS 32-4254, J. to dismiss the case in the opinion of the board. There is not substantial. File an advisory letter. File a letter of reprimand. Issue an order of probation with specific term of conditions, suspension or revocation.
Victoria Bowman, I move that the board revoke the license.
John Ortega, I second.
Okay. Roll call vote.
Any discussion?
Any discussion?
And roll call.
Roll call vote.
Emily Clark, aye.
Victoria Bowman, aye.
John Ortega, yes.
Earl Dusky, yes. Motion passes. This concludes the formal hearing. The board's discussion decision will be reduced to a written order and served on the parties. The parties will have further appeal rights. That will be explained with the board's order. This concludes this matter. Thank you for attending today. Eight. We will move to 8B, number 1, Susan Woodard. Case number 19175. These are investigation reviews.
Walked the last complainant out.
Let's take a 4-minute break.
Yeah, because we have to wait for him to come back anyway.
Yeah. Oh,
I can wait.
Okay. White, welcome back. Can you give us a rundown?
Okay.
Thanked.
Woodard is on 5/15/2019 on case 19175, on professionalism, sexual assault.
Okay. Would you like to give us a brief summary?
Yes, Board Member Dusky, members of the board. Before I go forward, has the board received the police report as well in this matter, confirming that there is no criminal activity found here?
We haven't received it yet.
I'm sorry?
We haven't received it yet.
Okay, it was provided by our office to...
Oh, you got that one, yeah.
Okay, I wanted to make sure the board had received that. On July 22nd, we made the police report available. There was a confirmation that there was no criminal activity involved in this case. I can make some brief comments about this matter. I think there's several things that are really not subject to real disagreement. First of all, nothing illegal occurred. It's confirmed by our analysis. It's also confirmed by the police report. There's just nothing illegal that occurred here. In addition, there was no provision of massage therapy services in this case. This isn't a massage therapy case. This is a fact in the very first line of the complaints. The complaint is that she went to see Dr. Woodward as a cuddle therapist. Cuddle therapy is not within the scope of practice. It's not within the board's scope for regulation. In addition, the conduct that did occur was not the product of force, threats, or coercion. We know that for a few reasons. First of all, she readily admits that she is the complainant is the one that initiated the skin-to-skin contact, requested the skin-to-skin contact. It was not Dr. Woodward who initiated any of those contacts. In addition, we know that from the police investigation itself, that she readily admitted to police that this was not the product of any force, threats, or coercion. In addition, the board has a more limited definition of sexual conduct and sexual activity. Our position is that it does not fall within the scope for that reason as well. Finally, we have absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Dr. Woodward, in her capacity as an MT, has ever acted inappropriately. There's simply no complaints, no reports that her conduct has ever been inappropriate. I think the thing that I struggle with this case is it doesn't, the reason I think why all of us looked at this one and it is a little bit different is it doesn't fit within the scope of the board's, within the board. The legislature, as recently as August 2008, has done some major overhauls of the regulatory purpose of the boards and has indicated that the boards are bound by the scope of their practice. If the board finds that this falls within the scope, you are de facto expanding your power to cuddle therapy. And so you are actually going to be now the massage therapy board and the cuddle therapy board, even though you presently are not the cuddle therapy board, by making a ruling that this falls within the scope of your jurisdiction. In addition, the board regulates only sexual contact between a massage therapist and a client. Certainly you can reach to illegal conduct if she was found guilty of committing a sexual offense, but we know from law enforcement who sat down in great detail with complainant that there was no sexual offense that occurred here. There's also consent. Specifically in her complaint, complainant says, I told her that it had always been my dream to be held naked by a woman. Police reached the same conclusion. I think realistically what we have here is we have a complainant who is coming out of a culture and a worldview in which even the collarbone being exposed was considered indecent. She, in a time of separating from her husband, decided to try new ways to express herself. We know that because she indicated that she had started a relationship with another woman. She was seeking physical affection and validation, and she was pushing back against certain cultural norms. I wholly support that. I support her seeking whatever her truth is, and I know that Dr. Woodward feels that way as well. And I'm really deeply sorry that the complainant is struggling with some of the things that the mismatch between how she feels and what her cultural background says. But her going on her journey should not be at Dr. Woodward's expense. I would note that there's no evidence that she's ever crossed any boundary while she's in her capacity as an MT. Her record is clear of any boundary allegations, and she follows all requirements of this regulated profession. While you have the ability to educate and discipline, when there's a sufficient nexus to massage therapy, there's not one here. We can each have our own belief as to how Dr. Woodward and the complainant interacted. But the MT board has never held itself out to be the moral police. It's never been out here to say this is how people conduct themselves in their private life. I think the MT board's been very thoughtful about saying where its jurisdiction is and applying its jurisdiction. In this case, this doesn't resolve anything related to massage therapy. And so we're asking, dismiss this on the basis of jurisdiction. I will note that in order to show that she is taking this seriously and as a learning experience, she's completed 9 hours of ethics training, including boundaries. This is not an MT matter, but she wanted the board to be comfortable knowing that she continues to examine and refine both her technical massage skills, but also ethical aspects of her practice. I direct the board back to the first line of the complaint. She came to Dr. Woodward for cuddle therapy. She did not come to Dr. Woodward for massage therapy. And so I would ask that whatever the board feels about this matter, it's not within the scope of massage therapy because no services were provided in massage therapy.
That being said, thank you. Can we ask questions?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Chair, we're certainly both available for questions.
Is your cuddle therapy and massage therapy advertised right there on the same page?
I have them as separate businesses and separate signage and separate.
That didn't answer the question. Are they advertised on the same page?
They were for a short time on the same page, but I did remove it.
I believe that's one of the biggest things is it intertwines them in the sense that they're on the same page. You've had cuddle therapy, massage therapy. You have yourself licensed. And then you have cuddle therapy. You know, which is not the same scope. So, but it gets gray when they're on the same page.
I did have it there temporarily as I was building my other website. I see that was an error. I see what you're saying.
But
it makes a gray area.
And Chair Dusky, if I may, she did have separate business cards for each of the practices. In addition, she had a separate room within her practice. So there was never a situation where she was administering massage therapy modalities in the cuddle room or vice versa. These were separate areas so that there was not that confusion. And the other aspect of this is the reason for the intermingling rule is to avoid confusion to someone who is receiving the services. This is not that case. Complainant very specifically indicates in her complaint she was there for cuddle therapy. So this is not akin to, for instance, if I'm running an accounting firm out of my law firm and you come to my office and I provide you some legal services and then I start doing your books, there's not that level of intermingling. This individual specifically knew they were coming for cuddle therapy. They wrote in their complaint they were coming for cuddle therapy. So the reason for that rule is to avoid that confusion. That confusion did not occur here, though. And that's, I think, a significant distinction.
John Ortega, do you have any receipts or canceled checks saying this was for cuddle therapy as opposed to...
No, she paid cash, and it's in my ledger each time that she paid, and I recorded it in my ledger.
And did you bring your ledger with you?
Yes.
And it says...
This is the ledger for her services, and it's it's a handwritten ledger, and it has $80 entries on it, which is the fee associated with her cuddle therapy, which is not a fee it's not the same fee as other services that she provides.
Well, that doesn't seem to... really be separating your business if you don't even specify what service you provided.
You did say it was for cuddle therapy, though?
Yes.
You did say that.
It doesn't say it on the ledger.
I'm not aware.
You're saying that right now.
Board Member Ortega, I'm not aware of a requirement in the actual regulations or law that does require the ledgers internally to be maintained. If there's no public confusion, then that, or no confusion for this complainant, that's different than the ledger. I appreciate and I agree a best practice in this situation would be to internally have some kind of wall or separation. But from a tax standpoint, as long as her taxes are being taken care of appropriately, okay.
Well,
from a corporation standpoint. But I think the question goes to a document that an individual will never see. A complainant will never see her ledger.
But there is confusion, or you two wouldn't be sitting here.
I don't agree with that. We're sitting here, Board Member Ortega, because someone has filed a complaint, and she indicated that she cast her net wide. She called the police, even though she didn't necessarily believe there was a criminal act. She filed with the board, even though she didn't necessarily believe there was necessarily a violation in massage therapy. I have to go back to her complaint, words out of the complainant's mouth, which specifically say she did not go to her for massage. She went to her for cuddle therapy. So I understand the best practice from a business perspective, and I agree. If Dr. Woodard had come to me on how to arrange her businesses, I would certainly suggest your internal ledgers should be separated. But the question is, the massage therapy was not provided here, and there does not appear to be anyone involved in the matter, the complainant, police, or us, who are taking the position that there was massage therapy provided.
Well, that's what we're here to decide. We're here to decide that right now.
And I certainly appreciate the board's scope.
Thank you.
My question is, why did it come to the massage board if there wasn't a confusion?
Because this person knows that she's licensed and filed a complaint. That's why. This is the same as many of the other cases that I have where people have multiple licensure. They shotgun approach this. There's nothing in here that indicates from the complainant herself that any modality administered was a massage modality. The complainant themselves said this was not massage, this was cuddle. So I don't think there's confusion. I think this is someone...
Speculation on your part. I believe that's speculation on your spot of what she intended or why she got it confused.
The best I can say...
concern is it confusing to other people in the state? We're here to protect the public.
The best I can...
We don't want to see the board... We don't want to see that somebody can have something that's ambiguous... And I'll use that word that's ambiguous, and that they start thinking that they can start putting things that don't belong in massage therapy when, no offense, but when they're on the same page, then it looks like they are intertwined. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
So that's why
you're here. That's why I feel you're here.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
I would just, remind the board that their options are to dismiss, file an advisory letter, non-disciplinary order for continuing education, or to proceed to formal interview.
I have a few questions.
Okay.
Ms. Woodward, where did you get your PhD, and what is your degree?
I got my PhD at Arizona State, and my PhD is interdisciplinary, chemistry and education, curriculum development, and instruction.
And give those breakdowns again besides education. So you have a...
I'm sorry, say again?
Okay. The PhD from ASU is in...
Chemistry and education, curriculum development and instruction.
Okay. And so where did you study cuddle therapy, and what kind of curriculum is that?
Cuddle therapy I studied under two different groups. The cuddleparty.com is the national or global cuddle party, so I went through that facilitation, and I also went through the Cuddlist training.
Is that like a certain amount of hours, or?
Yeah, it's a certain amount of hours, and just learning to hold space in a non-judgmental way and supporting the client in finding their voice and asking for what they want, and supporting them in that way.
I have a question. So do you think that using the title Dr. Woodward is implying that you have perhaps medical or psychological or psychiatric training, or do you distinguish that in your office that your degree is in... Your PhD is in chemistry and education.
I just go by Susan with my clients. I don't use Dr. Woodward with my clients. And I do also have a degree in psychology, an undergraduate degree.
A bachelor?
Uh-huh. Chair Bowman, that is just out of, she's in our materials referred to as Dr. Woodward out of respect to the fact that she does have those degrees. It's not used publicly, but I have a client who has earned certain academic recognition. This is in an environment where we are looking at a document as a board and as a respondent. So that's just a show of respect to Dr. Woodward. It's not used on her marketing materials.
I feel like, did you have a question too?
I did.
I'm just saying, the reason I feel like we're taking a little bit more time here is whether to move it forward or whether this needs to be. Go ahead.
With cuddle therapy, is it closed or unclosed?
It should be closed. But there are people have their own, since it isn't regulated, they have their own requirements around that. Each cuddleist does so.
So that's determined by individually for individual
your
sessions.
Your own comfort level and what you agree upon mutually.
Okay. If the boundaries say that it's supposed to be closed, then would that be overstepping the boundaries?
The contact in question occurred just outside of that time, and what I thought was consensual between friends and consenting adults. Not even within that session.
Okay. That kind of gives me a little concern that because there's been, could be some confusion made with having a license for massage therapy, that someone could misconstrue this to, if you were to do massage, maybe their expectations would be to push those boundaries a little bit more, and you may at some point entertain the idea of going further. Not that you would, but the idea from the public standpoint could lead to that. And that's one of my concerns.
And I take my job very seriously. I'm primarily a craniosacral therapist. And I don't want anything outside of that to compromise the work that I do and how I serve my community. So I've taken steps already in that I closed that option down entirely. I closed that business because my focus really is about providing health care for those individuals that need craniosacral therapy and massage therapy. So I recognize exactly what you're saying, that I don't want any confusion in one area to compromise or define me as a massage therapist.
But you have actually closed down your cuddle therapy business? It would bother me if I was to be cuddled by somebody that I didn't even know, whether it's male or female. The thoughts would go through my mind, you know, that something else could possibly occur later on as, you know, the relationship got further on down the line. I would assume that it would make me feel uncomfortable as an individual. I don't know about everybody else, but it just kind of gives me kind of concerns, you know, for this with massage, that things could bleed over and cross over. So I'm done.
I'm just convinced we have no jurisdiction over this. I don't see it.
I think the one comment that I would like to make is in the letter that we received from Attorney Carey, was that this business is separate from her massage therapy business. She uses a different trade name, quote, Cuddle Doc. And so for me, you know, I think you may be qualified in cuddle therapy by this, and it's unregulated, but I think that a BA in psychology doesn't really hold to what the standards that perhaps the medical, psychiatric, and more advanced psychology would their standard would be higher than what you got on cuddletherapy.com. But I do agree with
our business.
I have a question for Mr. Rain. If we go with the letter of concern, so in case the occurrences or
I mean, a letter of concern closes the file, non-disciplinary, it is kept in the file, would be of record, but it wouldn't be a public record of any discipline. It doesn't go nowhere. It's there in the file, but as you've heard in some of your training, you know, that wouldn't be a basis to believe that facts in a different case were true, but it could be an aggravating factor if there was discipline in the future. There had been that letter in the file. And some limited circumstances, you could use it to prove knowledge. You know, if you had a letter of concern on a very specific set of facts, and then you had those same set of facts, I think you could use it to show that you knew better because we had advised you. But you could also do, this board calls them advisory letters, but they're all, you know, whatever you call it. It's just a letter that says misconduct, if it's continued, could result in a future violation. And you also offer non-disciplinary order for continuing education at this stage, which is pretty much the same thing, except it requires some coursework.
So my thought in is, I'm taking her word, that she has shut this down. She admitted, And I appreciate that because I appreciate that you just flat out admitted that you did have the pages intermingled. And that was my concern, was that they were put together at one time. It does confuse people.
Well, they weren't really put together. They were separate businesses. We just advertised next to each other.
They were advertised on the same. Mr. White can that they were advertised on the same page. It was like massage therapist, cuddle therapist.
Well,
that gets confusing to people.
I understand that, but it's like massage therapist also teaches karate. He has his room for his massage therapy, and then he has a little dojo on the side, and he's teaching someone, and the person complains to us because during a karate session he busted the guy's lip. So now he's saying a massage therapist busted my lip. They're separate things. We have I don't see where we have any statutory regulation over cuddling, any at all, in any sense, in any form.
I still go for a letter of concern. Non-disciplinary. Let's go for a non-disciplinary letter of concern. The fact that they were advertised.
Well, the thing that I see is that because the cuddle therapy then progressed very rapidly to something personal.
But that's not our concern.
I understand
we're not in the cuddle business.
No, I understand that, but if that's the way she handles that part of her business, is that the way she handles her massage business? And I would agree with the non-disciplinary letter of concern so that she understands that professionalism is important.
I agree with John that it's not in our jurisdiction, but I also think that the letter of concern is just that. It's a letter of concern to make sure that she does understand that, yes, they're two separate businesses, should be advertised two separate websites, and, you know, there should be no misunderstanding or anything that is misconstrued by anyone coming in from the public as to, oh, she's a cuddle therapist. She's also a massage therapist. Oh, you know, that mindset.
Could they get intertwined?
Get intertwined by somebody in the public. So trying to keep them separate and making sure that understanding is very clear.
I would make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
An advisory letter is the
advisory letter.
Statute's term.
Do we need to state how it's stated, or can I
say pretty much what she said? Yeah, if you don't, well, there was a few different positions, so if you're going to make the motion, I would just ask that you briefly restate the reason for it.
That massage therapy, cuddle therapy are not intertwined on the same website, that they kept completely and solely separate. That they are two entities. Anything else to add to that?
Only thing that I can think of is that in the paperwork we received, and she also mentioned that, you know, some of the patients or the clients call her a cuddle therapist or cuddle doc, okay? I would not use the term doc or doctor or anything, because what her doctorate is in has nothing to do with massage, has nothing to do with cuddle therapy, you know. I think it would be I've got friends who have doctorates, and I call them doc. It's just a nickname. But because of the professionalism that she is trying to give off, the doc part is not related to anything that is massage-related.
However, is that just, like you said, nicknames that they're giving her?
Call her doc. Doc, but not cuddle doc, because that kind of is a little misleading.
You mean like Dr. Phil?
is that part of your motion, that concern as well?
Um,
I think that if, in fact, on her business card it says Cuddle Doc, it's a different trade name, and I think that implies an education beyond. She does not have a PhD in cuddling
therapy.
John Ortega, and I would reiterate, there is no statute that gives us authority over how she advertises for cuddling.
So you have a motion. The stated reasons for the motions are those that Chairman Dusky has stated, which have yet to include the use of the doc. So if you want to add that, I would suggest you say that you're adding that to your bases. And if you don't want to, you don't have to. But that's their comments, right. But your motion didn't include it, and then you haven't said, I adopt that.
Yeah, let's just leave that out there right now.
Okay. So then...
The biggest thing is that there's no advertising.
Yeah, so...
Cuddle therapy with massage therapy, cranial sacral, together in the same place.
So...
Two separate and sole.
Just need to...
Kept that way in their advertising.
Okay. Victoria Bowman, I will second the advisory letter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You can ask for discussion if you want any more
discussion.
And it's non-disciplinary. You can just do a voice vote. You don't need a roll call.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
I'm opposed.
So we have three yeas and Mr. Ortega opposes.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll send that to the group, okay?
Thank you.
And it is 11:13. Item.
Good morning. My name is Sabra Barnett. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Farino. Chairman Dusky, we submitted on July 12th, 2019, a pretty extensive package to the board, which included Mr. Farino's denial of these allegations. It also included a polygraph examination report that Mr. Farino voluntarily submitted to. Mr. Farino, in that polygraph examination, denied any contact with Ms. O'Malley's vagina or vaginal area. That was determined to be truthful. We also provided quite a bit of information about this massage as well. And we would ask that based on this information that you all dismiss this case.
We have complaint.
No, not yet.
What is the status? They don't come to the.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
My God, sorry.
Victoria Bowman, I would like to move this to a formal interview.
John Ortega, I second.
Ellen, any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? Motion moves unanimously. Because it's...
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Remember? Okay.
Jared Slattery? say it right the second time?
Yeah. My attorney is not here.
Okay.
And I would just like to postpone until I can have him here. I don't know why he didn't show up today.
An investigative to whether we're going to have, whether you're going to need him or not. You're welcome to have him here. You know, you've been welcome to have him here, but it's
unnecessary to have him here.
Okay.
Are you expecting him maybe today?
No.
Okay, because you could table it for a little while, but it sounds like he's not coming. So. Or she.
Yeah. So, give us a brief overview.
This is a client who I've had about a year ago, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. I can't remember exactly. And then I saw her again, and I gave her my card more recently. And I said, hey, if you want to come and get a massage, I'm still here in the same spot. That's basically all that was said then. And the week prior to the incident, I gave her a massage. There was no problem. And she left, and then she came back. We just had a regular massage. She had a 60-minute massage. It was just a relaxation massage. And it was pretty normal. We were more chatty than usual. She's one of the clients who I did chat with, which I regret now and will not really be that chatty in the massage room again. And my professionalism slipped, and I asked her out. And I immediately realized that was not a good way to go. I felt horrible immediately, and I saw her tense up, and it was embarrassing to realize that I had breached my own ethics without even paying as much attention to it as I should have. And she responded, she was clearly tense, and I asked if she would like to continue the massage. She did want to continue it. The incident happened about 45 minutes in, and she wanted to finish the massage. So I'll finish it. And I did not want to charge her for that one. I just said simply, this is a free massage. I can't believe that I have embarrassed you like this. I can't believe I've embarrassed myself like this. And that was it. And then she rushed out of the area, and that was the end of that interaction.
Okay. And how is the...
I talked to her Friday. She was following through.
Pardon?
She's been following through with the case. Okay. But Mr. has also, you don't have this in your packet, but he has did an ethical training class on Friday coming here today. He did one in self-evaluation for ethical practice. Did
one for ethical practice. We also did one for ethical and science therapy. Comprehensive overview. The question is: do we want to move it forward, or with his
permission? Couldn't we see if we could get an agreement of some kind with the staff, or maybe take some more classes?
Consent agreement.
Agreement for some more classes and. He seems to understand the seriousness of what he did. I mean,
yeah.
How many hours does he have already?
Just reading out of both. I'm 7 so far.
Are those online or?
Those are online. Yes.
Okay. What would you recommend?
You guys are the class experts.
You can.
Well, you've been here for 10 years. You know what we usually recommend. And
you can do a non-disciplinary order for continuing education without. You don't have to offer that as a consent agreement. You can just impose that. If you want it to be a disciplinary continuing education, you would offer that by consent agreement, and if not accepted.
The question is real quickly, do we want it disciplinary to?
Well, I agree with John. He already recognizes the seriousness of what he did. It was just something verbal, and I think he's learned from that, and he's already taken these classes. I think because they're online, I think he needs to have at least one more for in class.
In class, yeah. Sit down in class. Yeah,
Lee has got one for 8 hours, I think.
Yes.
Okay. 8 hours in class for ethics.
He's already taken 7.
And well, even ethics and business practices or something, professionalism. I mean, I think he's already done some good stuff, but I agree. I would agree with 8 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Do I hear a motion?
Well, we decided if it's disciplinary or non-disciplinary. I think we're still talking about that.
I didn't get an answer on that.
It was non-disciplinary continuing education, and you could just make a motion to issue an order for non-disciplinary continuing education.
And that would be on his record in case something came up in the future?
Similar to a letter of concern. It wouldn't be visible to the public.
But it would,
file, but it would be in the file.
It would come before the board should something else happen.
Yeah. It stays in it's part of the record.
Right, part of the record. Okay. I move that we issue a non-disciplinary letter with 8 hours in class in ethics and business practices to be completed within 4 months?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah. In-house, though.
In-house, right. In-house. Classroom setting. And to come back before us when it's completed.
Can we do that?
Or maybe, I don't know, can we do that? Yeah.
Not
okay.
The command, but I think he could certainly be invited to come back in informally.
Right. And then he could get 3 CEs for doing that. Okay. That would be staff approved.
Classes.
And in addition to his usual.
Regular, yeah.
John Ortega, I second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes unanimously. He'll set you up. And you understand what you've done?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. We already did Adam Heisler.
Application review.
Okay. Application reviews. Okay. We are on. We're still on. Sorry, my papers are mixed up here. Number 8D. We're on D now. Application reviews, number 1, Joseph Aaron.
Okay.
Is it Joseph Aaron or what?
Aaron Joseph.
Well, I always thought a comma in your minute that was backwards.
No, but the last name is first. Like, this is Susan. So, last name is, you got yours in different. You've got last.
Yeah.
Is he here?
No.
Oh, sure.
Application review. That might be the only.
Okay.
And the.
On July 29th, application review came back from the. From the Justice Institute, and she also responded on her application with a yes answer on question number 17. History information confirmed she had an arrest in Oklahoma, and
She is on probation for 5 years for possession of contraband and a penal institution. She won't be on probation until October 12th.
The offense was twofold, right? It was a domestic kind of issue, but also some drug possession.
She's also the one that had her probation officer write that she'd known her for the whole last 4 years. And
that's the spy.
Yeah, and that she was exemplary.
And as well, this would be among those crimes that you would have to find a reasonable relationship to the practice of massage therapy for it to be a bar to licensure. But you can consider any act that would be grounds for discipline against a licensee as a basis to deny license, but that would be more discretionary.
We do not necessarily have to wait until her probation is over.
No. You don't.
This
isn't a bar to licensure. You could say that it's a grounds for denial.
If we could find close.
And offer a consent agreement for licensure in lieu of denying that it has any terms you want. None of that's required. You can just grant the license if that's your pleasure.
Yeah. Okay.
I personally would make a motion that we grant it. I mean, the letters that she got from her probation officers and she's learned, she's done, she knows what she's done. And like you said, it's not really related. It was just a place in her life.
Victoria Bowman, I move that we grant Aaron Joseph her massage license.
And further discussion? I keep forgetting that one. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimously. Accepted. Unanimously. Okay. Let me see if I'm getting my names right. Anthony Mills?
Yes.
You too?
How you doing?
All right, very good.
You got a letter, huh? A week ago, I've finally seen it.
Floating around. Okay. Mr. Mills was arrested in Tempe in 2018 and had outstanding warrant 2018-00-00-443 for driving under the influence of drugs issued on 10-10-2018 in Kyrene Court.
Tell us a little bit more.
Okay, January 2nd, 2018 is the day I got pulled over and got arrested. I was going out to dinner with one of my coworkers right after work. Still under the weather. I got pulled over. Police officer said, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" I said, "No." He said, "You failed to stay in your lane as you were turning." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." He asked me, was I under the influence of anything? I said no. He further on proceeded to ask me to get out the car. He made me do the physical test.
Field sobriety
test. Yeah, the field sobriety test. I did that. I passed that with flying colors. I took a breath test. I passed that, but he said they still needed to take me in to take my blood. Why do you need to do that? And I passed. Like, just to see if you are still under the influence. I'm like, well, if you take my blood, you're going to find something from days ago, not right now, because I'm headed to dinner from work. And they took me in, and I refused to give them my blood for 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours. So they held me in there until I finally said, okay, you know what? I'm tired of being in here. Take my blood. Took my blood, sent me home. A few days later, they said they were going to contact me within 30 days. I didn't get an email, a phone call, anything in the mail from them until I think one day I got in a car accident March 12th. A few months later, as I'm in the hospital room, the police officer comes in and tell me, you have a warrant. I'm like, for what? He said, failure to show up in court. I'm like, is this for the DUI situation? He said, yes. I'm like, well, they said they were going to contact me. Never did. So I went to court. They gave me, I got on a payment plan to just start paying off my tickets, or the charge that they gave me, and start to pay it off, and ran into another hard spot to where I couldn't pay. They gave me another one, came back with money, told them I'm trying, I'm working, I'm doing this and any other. I'm doing everything on my own. My job I'm paying is not paying for a lot of stuff, so it's a struggle. But I'm here, and I'm trying to pay it. So they took that away. Struggling to pay. As of like right now, I'm still struggling to pay, and that's that.
I'd like to ask a question.
Sure.
Mr. Mills, what have you learned sitting here listening to what we deal with every month?
I try to deal with a lot. You have cases from all over, I feel like. Well, all kinds of situations, you know, some may be very worse than others, but all in all, what I've noticed that you guys actually take the time out to listen to the people who is here trying to plead their case or whatever it may be. You guys actually try to figure out, listen, and try to get to know a person a little bit just from them being up in a short time span. And you guys are very fair with what you do.
Do you think that sitting here today and watching this will help you in your massage practice handle yourself well?
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay.
Where do you finally stand with all that? I mean, is it still, are you on probation still? Are you?
It was never a probation thing. All I had to do is just, you know, after a certain time, going in and out of the courtroom so many times, saying I'm trying to pay, but I'm struggling. You know, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and the other. Judge still gives me, she knows, it's almost like we're almost best friends now, as many times as I've seen her. But she knows that I'm trying to pay, and she knows that, you know, I'm trying to work hard, trying to get this, all of this stuff behind me. You know, this happened way back in 2018, and it's still on my back today. I'm just trying to have a clean slate.
Can I ask a question? I'm just, the fines that you're paying, are that those related to the failure to appear side of it, or the DUI traffic stop?
The DUI traffic stop. The first one I had was the failure to appear. Then I came, and then we set up the monies and stuff like that.
Victoria Bowman, I move that the board issue Anthony Mills his massage license.
John Ortega, I second.
All in favor? More discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Appreciate you all. Thank you. Have a blessed day.
You too.
3, Sarah Benavajo.
Good afternoon. Excuse me, it's Van Hoy. Thank you for...
Mr. Chairman, can I just ask your address for the record, your current address for the record?
P.O. Box 1791.
And your physical address for the record?
5525 East Thomas Road.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is that an apartment?
Yes, H5 is the unit. H5... is the unit number.
Mr. White?
Van Hooy is petitioning for a waiver, a second-time waiver.
Oh, this is the one.
Short.
Thank you, Chairman Dusky. Thank you, board members. I appreciate you taking the time to hear me at all. I'm not asking for a second-time waiver. I'm asking for a first-time waiver But the second time I'm applying for a license, which is an odd situation. And I appreciate that it doesn't seem to be a clear path in the statutes, but I looked at the statutes and it seems to me that the board has a lot more discretion than you might think that you have. You have among your powers and duties to evaluate qualifications for applicants for licensure and to issue licenses to persons who meet those requirements. That's not the issue for me. I do meet the requirements, and I don't think that the financial qualification is the issue either. I definitely meet that. The question is whether or not you can and have the authority to issue a waiver in a situation where a person has been licensed in the past, but did not seek a waiver at the time. I didn't need a waiver at the time. I didn't even know that there was a waiver available at the time. I certainly didn't need it. But I do now, and so I was being told that I was not considered a first-time applicant for purposes of the waiver, but I was also not considered to be a renewal or reinstatement for purposes of reduction. And my position is I don't think that the statutes really allow for that kind of a I'm a first-timer for some purposes, but not for others. And so I looked at the law to see if there was a way to read this that that makes these laws not seem to be in conflict with each other. The section on fees in 32-4227 says that the board shall establish non-refundable fees that do not exceed. So this statute sets a limit to what you may charge. It does not set a minimum. Everything that I looked at shows that the board has a lot of broad discretion regarding what you would require specifically for renewals and reinstatements. It does not say that there is a minimum. The section that says that that's actually in the state government Title 41, that requires you to waive any fee charge for an initial license for an individual applicant whose family income does not exceed, et cetera, et cetera.
Right there, you said for an initial license.
Yes.
You've been licensed before, though.
Yes, and if I could finish the point, that statute is mandatory. It has the word shall. It is mandatory for a particular circumstance, but it does not say anywhere there or in any other statute that you may not, in your discretion, also issue a waiver under other circumstances as you see fit. And it does say that you're, so it has a ceiling for how much you can charge. It does not have a minimum. Mm-hmm. And it does have a time when you must issue a waiver, but does not say that you may not under other circumstances in your discretion. And it gives you broad discretion in most of these statutes that I've read. So what I'm asking you for is to consider a situation where, though you are not required to give me a waiver, you do have discretion to consider the circumstances. And the other statute I wanted to bring to mind is on my phone here, excuse me, 32-4401. A says a profession or occupation shall not be regulated except for the exclusive purposes of protecting the public interest. And I appreciate that that's what you've been doing today, and I've been watching very carefully and listening. I think that you're so zealous about that that you're going a little bit overboard. I would, as a member of the public listening to those past cases, I would just urge you to consider not only that there's a statutory limit to your authority, but there's First Amendment issues in some of those cases that I don't think were being considered at all. I appreciate that your concern is the public safety, but the public interest is broader than that. It's broader than just the public safety. You have to keep in mind public interest in other areas as well, and one of them is I don't think that the fees are intended to be punitive. I think that's one of the reasons that there's a ceiling, and they're also, I don't think, intended to keep out people because they can't financially pay. I'm hoping that my situation is temporary, and I'm working very hard to try to make that happen. And it may mean that I have to move out of state in order to make that happen. That's something that I'm having to consider, and it's very frustrating to me. But in the meantime, I was really hoping that I could renew or reinstate or simply apply again for my license and make some extra money so that I can change my future. My financial situation changed a lot in the last 3 years, after my divorce, I am not considering this a permanent situation. But I have never before asked you for a fee waiver and would not have done so except for the fact that I financially have no option.
Mr. Rain?
In short, I would say that I don't believe the board has the authority to grant the fee waiver under the language of the statute for first time applying for a license in the state for the first time, which is clearly not the fact. And there's no authority for you to not collect fees that you've established. In fact, if you fail to collect a fee owed to the state that is established by law, then you may be personally responsible to pay it to the state plus 25%.
Yeah. So it's not a first time. I know it's not a first time application, but it's not a first time license. The way we read it is
I was licensed 10 years ago. And under your rules, if it's more than 3 years, then I have to start over. As if I had never applied before.
Applied for the loan, that didn't apply, that didn't even. But it's still a first time. So
exactly. So the statute says that you're not required to give it to me. I was not aware. I'm sorry, my vision's not very good, Mr. Rain. I was not aware of the statute that requires you to pay a certain amount of fees to the state. But it does give you discretion, as far as I can see, as to setting what the fees would be. You have discretion to set your fees as long as they don't go over a ceiling.
That would be across the board.
Well, in your board's rule and in your statute, it says you shall collect fees not to exceed. And then in your rule, you've established the fees, and it says the board shall collect the amounts for the various types of licenses. Collecting the fee is mandatory.
May I ask a question? Has the board established a fee for a circumstance like this?
The board has established a fee for initial applications.
I've been told this is not an initial application. Has the board, in other words, have you established a fee already?
License before. So you've had to have a different.
And yet I'm being denied the fee that would be given to somebody who's renewing or reinstating.
Because you're not renewing and reinstating.
So I'm not an initial applicant, and I'm not renewing, and I'm not reinstating. Is there some category that I'm missing here?
Yes, you're misreading the statute for the fee waiver, which says you are applying for the license in the state for the first time. It doesn't use the words initial applicant.
And I'm not suggesting that that section applies to me.
Mr. Chair, the law is quite clear.
I'm not arguing
with you. The Attorney General's office's position is you are obligated by state law to collect this fee, and if you don't collect it, you will be responsible. Yeah.
Which fee is that, though?
Do we need to make a motion on it? Or
you can make a motion to rule on her request for a fee waiver. Her application isn't actually on the agenda, just the request for a fee waiver. I don't understand there's any impediment to just staff granting the license upon the payment of appropriate fee.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, this was kind of our fault because we had already told her this information, but we thought out of courtesy for the person requesting it, we would give her a chance to complete her case before the board. What she's being told today by the Attorney General's office is identical to what the staff has told her as well. But she wanted to make her case, and we provided the opportunity for her. The board has listened to the case, and the Attorney General is basically saying the very same thing we've said as well. So I don't know what else. We thought it would be helpful to maybe even have the discussion, which it probably is periodically. But we were not able to offer her resolution.
I think it calls for a vote from the board to rule on the request.
Okay.
Either approve the request for a fee waiver or deny the request for a fee waiver.
So we need a motion.
I think because it's prepared before you, that's appropriate.
I'm sorry, one more thing. I was asking for a fee waiver or in the alternative to be able to pay a lower amount for either a renewal or reinstatement or whatever you call it.
You don't have the authority.
Ellen, the agenda is for.
You can now announce this one.
a request for an economic necessity fee waiver as a non-first-time applicant. So the only, I mean, it doesn't cite the statute, but the advice would be the same. To the extent you could rule on a future fee renewal application fee, I would advise you that you cannot just choose to reduce your fees without any statutory or rule-based authority. And I doubt, really, that this future renewal fee or subsequent fee that might come about in the future is actually on your agenda, but even giving that the benefit of the doubt, I don't, you know, but the advice is still the same.
I make a motion, Earl Dusky, that we make a motion to deny the fee waiver. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming today. Okay, so we are on section number 9, section of the board member delegate for the FSMHB annual meeting discussion and approval for the board representative direction to staff.
I move that Emily be our representative. And she's agreed to do it.
Just a vote?
Yeah, maybe a second and a quick vote if there's no other.
I would second that motion. Earl Dusky, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? You're going to love Elena. You'll love the FSMTB. That the meetings.
I can't back out now, can I?
Where else do you get it? Like it's almost like a free vacation. Assistant Attorney General's report on the legal compliance analysis of legislative enacted House Bill 2569.
I don't have anything additional to present. You have the memo. If there are questions about portions of it, I may be able to answer it today, or I could return or advise staff in between meetings. But this memo, just so you have it in your packet, is a memo that was prepared by our section chief counsel, John Talier, about these issues in House Bill 2569. Every different agency, it impacts them slightly differently. And there are questions about establishing residence and what staff will look at. They may develop a plan and ask you to approve it, but generally speaking, I don't have anything to add, I'd say, today on that.
I mean,
now there's basically nothing for us to do but stay up to date on it?
Well, I'm not sure. Does staff, I don't know if they need any or they plan to have any future policy proposals that they may need to bring to you. Sometimes some people have called for adopting a substantive policy statement for each board to determine what you will look at to determine residency. You know, other boards are doing that. There's going to be some people inventing that wheel in the first instance that, you know, you might be able to piggyback on. That might need board action. One thing in the law is that you're only allowed to come into another state by this reciprocity at the license, at the level of license that you have. So, you know, if you were let's say it's the chiropractic board, if you were just a chiropractic assistant, but that's the only chiropractic license they have in Oklahoma, you don't get to come in Arizona and be a doctor of chiropractic. You'd have to come in at the chiropractic assistant level. So perhaps maybe from a different state, you could have something that comes about from time to time where maybe they have an associate level massage license, not a full professional level. That's one thing that boards may have to look at and talk maybe even on a case-by-case basis as people come from different states, look to see and make a determination, was this the same level license? But that would be more of a case-by-case determination. Any exams that you would require would still be required in terms of state-specific exams.
How would that affect, like, I know they have apprentice or, like in Utah now, they're starting to those programs.
So likely if that person had not obtained licensure at the same level as you would see it, then you would say that you don't have 1 year of licensure in another state. If I'm not mistaken, there is no residency requirement for your existing reciprocity, just 2 out of the last 5 years. So this is a shorter window, but it's intended to have people move into Arizona to work. So that's one distinction between your existing reciprocity and this bill would be that you'd have to reside in Arizona and demonstrate that. And that's, you know, like I said, we'd have to establish what we want to look at for residency, but this memo and then other agencies are working on it are in the process of looking at that. It incorporates some of the use of crimes and how you can use that and evaluating whether it has a reasonable relationship to the practice. That's kind of incorporated in this bill. Let me think of any other notable points.
This doesn't null and void what we've already got, though, right?
No, it's in addition to what you already have.
Right. So if a person's been in good standing, something's just happened, like the military, and they've had to move here, and they've had a good massage practice thing in another state, they can move here under this bill.
Yeah, and maybe someone who only works here occasionally and doesn't reside here, but maybe, you know, let's say New Mexico or something, then if they've been practicing 2 out of the last 5 years and all in good standing and everything else in place, then they could come through our normal reciprocity. Assuming they qualify under the normal reciprocity.
So this one doesn't nullify the rule?
No, it doesn't. And you could see, you know, just obviously those examples we just gave, you know, sometimes you may not like this new law because you don't plan to live here, establish residency. So if you've been working long enough in the other state, then maybe you'd just go through our traditional, which was recently, you know, in that about a year ago now, was reduced to only 2 out of the last 5 years. So it's not a much more difficult burden.
Yeah.
I can't think of a ton more to say at this time. You may, like I said, have a policy statement or at least present it to you how the staff will initially look to see if someone's a resident, or as people may try and use this, we may look at other states' license types and present it to you on a case-by-case basis. You know, 50 states, there could be a lot of different variations on the type of license, and you may get a question presented to you at one point, you know, is this the same level? Because there, you don't need to take an exam, and you don't need to go to a board-approved school, and then they have a license where you do, so we must assume that would be the higher professional license like ours. And so you may get those questions as people start using this, but no one's done like a 50-state survey for you to make that decision without having a case in front of you. But it's, you know, it was highly touted by the governor's office as you know, opening Arizona up for business. A lot of agencies have been moving towards greater levels of reciprocity and interstate mobility, and this is just pursuing that further. And I'm not sure what else I could tell you that would be of note other than staff would still, I presume, and they can correct me if I'm wrong, but if someone clearly qualifies, just like they clearly might qualify for licensure now, they have the delegated power to grant licenses. So I'm not sure if that was the plan. If someone, you know, clearly applies for reciprocity currently, do we issue that if there's no dings on the license? Like someone who's 20 years in another state, clean record, no criminal history, would we bring that to the board on a reciprocity, or would that just get issued?
Oh, no, that would just get issued.
So you may see, I mean, and maybe when these start coming in under this new law, you'd bring them to them if you had a question. But let's say it's someone who clearly has residence because they've lived in Arizona their whole life. They've also had a license out of New Mexico for 20 years, no crimes, no. It may just get granted as clearly meeting the statute. So the next one, at least for sure, that you'll see would be one that, you know, maybe the residency is a little not quite fitting, maybe some sort of criminal history that you need to evaluate, or maybe there's a weird license type that, you know, they want you to look at the requirements in that state and compare them to the requirements in this state. And so you may see some cases eventually that are using this statute. And I'd say just hold your breath because they probably pass another law this coming legislative session about residential. I mean, so this is what's in place now, and I personally have not experienced seeing an application come through this process, even provisionally. I mean, it doesn't take effect till like later in the month, right? But
August 26th.
But I haven't heard of any questions that have been actually resolved yet. It's all contemplating what might come in at this stage still. And staff, I imagine, you know, will create any necessary forms. And you know, to the extent there's an application form, we can work together. And if they have a question for you about, you know, how do you want us to put this on there, then they'll bring it back to the board. But that might not be necessary either, because it's not rocket science. It's pretty much the same criminal evaluation that you would have done under the law that existed that allowed people to petition you. We had one of those, you know, where they can petition you even outside of applying for a license. Does it bear a reasonable relationship to the practice? Is it this type of felony? Is it a dangerous crime, violent crime? And then working, the staff still confirms licensure in other states using, you know, National Practitioner Data Bank or getting in touch directly with the other state. And residency, like I said, in the memo, there's some examples, but, you know, you'd look to see if they own property in the state. Do they, you know, have utilities in their name? Where do they have a driver's license? Are they an Arizona registered voter? You know, are they banking in Arizona? Are there children in Arizona schools? And it could be a totality of the circumstances, but when they get a weird one, I'm sure that it's a close call. They'll probably bring it to you, and we'll have a more thorough discussion. Or, like I said, maybe a substantive policy statement could establish this is what we're going to look at, but you don't necessarily need that.
But this hasn't passed legislation yet.
It's passed and been signed. It just doesn't take effect until later August, which is whatever, 90 days or
okay.
The law is a certain amount of time after the legislative session ends.
Let's really just wait and see what happens. Here.
Yeah. Well, and if staff wants to present something, we can talk more about it and present something to you for approval.
Do you guys foresee any problems?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Otherwise, everyone will be able to hear me. No, Mr. Chairman, only because the board has a history of reciprocity. So this is just a continuation thereof with some statutory adjustments. So the tradition and the availability is historic with the board.
And I think also lucky to have a simple license category instead of some boards have five different categories of licensure. It's confusing.
Executive Director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. Let me just begin with an announcement. Some of you may know already, April Romero is leaving us starting next Monday with the Arizona Pharmacy Board. Great opportunity for her. And
thank you.
She'll be personally and collectively missed at this end. Hopefully you won't notice any difference in the quality of the minutes because they're being taken by her currently, and I will probably be succeeding her starting with the next meeting. But April has, I've only been here a short time, as you know. April has been here a relatively short time, but has been very authoritative on knowledge of the board and has been visionary, too, with making changes to how things can be done following Ryan's time here. So she'll be a great asset for pharmacy, and I'm sure the director knew that when he made the offer without consulting first. That's okay. This is the natural order of things. I just need to find somebody over at pharmacy that we can get.
Yeah.
Return fire, perhaps. But anyway, we're certainly very proud and pleased for April and very grateful for her. I'm grateful personally for her service, and certainly the board is as well. On budget, let me pass out a document. I've got these pre-counted, so you can just pass to your right. This is an interesting document. It just shows the new fiscal year funding. And although the figure is about $10,000-some-odd higher, it's not an actual increase because a lot of our pass-through monies have increased as well. So it's relatively status funding. But it does show that we are paying more back into the operating fund for the board than we're collecting more than we are spending. So it does continue with that. And I don't have a financial statement for you today. They've had a hiccup with the software over at DOA, and I don't have current first month report in the new fiscal year, but we'll definitely have that at the next meeting. And I thought we'd also start doing quarterly as well. We do have a new budget analyst with the Office of Strategic Planning and Budget, OSPB, Kylie Jensen, and I met with her last week with staff and also representative from Business Services. And she is new to Arizona. She's from Utah, and she's new to OSPB, and she's new to us. So we will be nice to her. We're not going to take advantage of the governor's budget officer. But we did use a charm offensive at the first meeting. I'm not above that. So we got to convince her that we are the good guys and need continued funding. Lastly, and why do people have white hair prematurely? Not mentioning any names. Pass that down. I found out that we are doing our five-year regulatory rule review this year. Ryan, apparently my predecessor, did not know it, and I did not know it. But I did receive a letter telling me of that, and we're working with an outside consultant who has been recommended to us by GRC, the Governor's Regulatory Review Council. And she actually has done a lot of these rules review for other boards and commissions here in the building. And Jeannie Hahn is her name, I'm sorry. And we are actually scheduled to have her work done by the end of this month, because we will be appearing before GRC for a work session in late August. And that would be then followed by a hearing before the GRC commission, probably in September. So this is something that happens naturally, like a lot of deadlines in life. But it caught me a bit by surprise from the standpoint that we didn't have a lot of time to fully respond. So I'm very grateful for Jeannie's work, which we don't really have the capacity to do on staff. She does finish the work for the psychology board, and that's how I found out about her. And she's done a number of boards and commissions here in the building. So I wanted to make you aware of that, and there's the actual copy of the letter informing us of this fact. As we get closer to the report completion, I'll make sure you each get a copy of that, and then we'll notify you in the event you'd like to attend the work session before GRC in August and let you know about the following hearing in September, just in the event you want to be aware of it. And if you are not able to attend, we'll certainly give you a summary afterwards with any questions that the GRC has for us or suggestions and so forth. One interesting thing right now is an interpretation by this attorney that our authority to set hours under regulation may not be what it appears to be on its face. So I've asked Michael Rain to give his interpretation. His preliminary oral interpretation was that the board is following statute and rule with regard to the 700 hours. But we've also gotten the approval of Senator Brophy McKee to authorize a legal review by the Arizona Legislative Council, because Jeannie was very insistent on the fact that she didn't necessarily want this to go to GRC without this being resolved in a more definitive matter. And I didn't take that as an actual threat per se, but I took it as a cautionary advisory from outside counsel, that we want to be sure that we have collective counsel agreement on something the board has been doing for a number of years. So Senator Brophy McKee was very gracious to allow her office to provide the permission to access Ledge Counsel. And we are working with an attorney as of last week who's doing a review on it. And we'll get that answer back to you, as well as Mr. Rain's response. I think I see this more as a scholarly investigation of legal intent. But the timing of it certainly has caught my attention, and I would love for when we make our formal submission to GRC that we have general consensus among the council, legal counsel. So that's the latest on that. I don't know, Michael, if I'm stepping on any lines of yours or if you'd like to add anything. Or
I mean, just briefly, the issue is that by statute it said that the board may increase the number of hours required for licensure by rule. And you did that by rule from 500 to 700. But the statute that says that appears in a section of your law that relates also to foreign applicants. So there's some concern that, wait, this might have only applied to foreign applicants, not to all applicants. But in any event, it's existing rule, and until it's not, it's academic in that regard. The law quite clearly says all applicants. The rule requires all applicants to have 700 hours. And the GRC regulatory review, one of the purposes of it is to analyze all your rules and see if they're consistent with statutes, see if they're still needed or could be improved. And so it's a natural part of the GRC review is to do what's happening. And Ms. Hahn, I've never met her, but she came highly recommended for this very specific function. Our office doesn't do rule writing because it's policy making. So, you know, no matter how much agencies end up paying the Attorney General's office for extra legal advice, that's the one place that we really can't go. So it's good that they have her advice and help to, because that's a complex process. And now it sounds like you have another attorney who will look at that specific issue.
You want to embellish your comment? Because we have not said anything official, but are you able to say anything official yet? Or?
Well, I would, to the extent you want further legal advice, I'm not sure it's really on the agenda for that, but also I would want to go into executive session to provide it. But I don't necessarily see the rule the same way as Ms. Hahn.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was regarding your client, your current client.
Oh.
Or is today not the day to
do? No, I'm not at liberty to do
that. Okay. The last thing I have, Mr. Chairman, is we have started doing a response card from the licensees on their experience with the licensing process, and that's the form. And we put these in the envelopes as they go out, and they all come to my attention, I hope. So I'm able to screen the good, the bad, and the unhappy. And what you look for with the unhappy ones are sometimes trends of why something did not go well, either statutorily or just functionally and so forth. So we get a number of these in, we'll give a report to the board of what they say in general, but also what they have said specifically. I think it'll be a useful, to a certain extent, a measuring device.
Useful.
So at least we're making the attempt to ask, and those who want to avail themselves are given the opportunity to offer their evaluation. So this has just started 30 days ago, so we're kind of just getting kicked off. I think that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
I just wanted to say thank you for doing that. It's the little things that you've been doing. I just wanted to say thank you. You know,
we're making this up as we go, but that's not official. So.
So, okay, discussion and possible actions for future agendas.
So, I don't know if that's discussed here, but it's, I read this interesting article in the Capital Times about how the acupuncture is starting a program for opioid addiction to help people. Opioids. The massage board has never considered doing anything like that. Or massage therapists have never considered doing anything like that. Because all you have to do is Google massage and opioids, and there's these tons of studies on people who have done work with people addicted to opioids with massage therapy instead of other forms of treatment.
Just to note of caution, the discussion can only be whether to include that on a future agenda.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm
doing. Yeah. You can discuss whether you want to bring that up.
Do you want how about a report with the potential of a witness to come in from acupuncture to talk about why they did it?
Yes, that would be
okay.
That'd be wonderful, yes.
That's a great idea.
You know, we have, Mr. Chairman, we have
been contacted, and we don't currently have any authority, which I'll say again for the record, about licensees who wish to use CBC. I always get this wrong, sorry. CBD, thank you. I always think of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. using these processes for a topical application during massage. And we do not have currently statutory or regulatory authority on that at all. But you could maybe, we could expand the topic for discussion that day to include that if you want to do as well. So right now it's anecdotal. It's mostly phone calls coming in for people asking for permission and then saying they've already done it, but they're asking for permission. So interest, but there's no authority for us to do anything. So but let's, I'll put that on the next calendar and we'll see if somebody from.
There's no regulation on the type of lotion or oils we use.
No. They're looking for.
Let's not get in the middle of that discussion. That's not on your agenda. It's kind of not the kind of discussion you want to have. That's not on your agenda.
Well, may we add that to the opioid discussion next time and allow, since we can't stick needles into people, and acupuncturists can, our method of application would perhaps be a choice of oil or technique. So can we add that to the agenda item?
The board's intent is.
So that it becomes a more comprehensive.
Yes.
Okay. Like that?
There we go.
Okay.
Anything else?
Do you have an announcement?
Agenda. summary of current events. By law, the summary of current events is limited to a summarizing recent occurrences. The board cannot propose to take action on any of the matter of the summary unless the specific matter they notice for legal action. Okay. Number 14, discussion and possible actions items for future massage board agendas.
Just announced that.
Oh, okay.
Our next board meeting.
Arizona Massage Board meeting.
August 26th. I move the meeting be adjourned.
Emily Clark, second.
All in any further discussion?
All in
favor?
Aye.
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 Meeting adjourned, 12:33.